Hello and welcome to a DerivSource podcast. I'm Julia Schieffer, founder and editor of DerivSource.com. After much anticipation, the CFTC has passed final rules on the governance of swap execution facilities, or otherwise known as SEFs, including rules on minimum quotes, among others. There are lots of questions about what the implications of these new rules are and how these new rules might impact SEFs themselves and, of course, the industry at large. In today's DerivSource podcast, I'm speaking with Tom Zekas, Managing Director, Business Development at State Street. And we're going to be discussing some of these implications of the new SEF rules and how the market should be responding going forward. So, Tom, just to start off, could you give our listeners at DerivSource a brief overview of the rules that were finalized May 16th and really elaborate on some of the rules, what they might mean for SEFs and the industry?
Sure, Julia. First, on behalf of State Street, I'd like to thank you for asking us to participate in this. State Street has always been very broadly supportive of the derivatives rules coming out of the CFTC, and we're very excited, despite the long delay, that the rules are actually out and the ambiguity has been taken out of the questions about execution in the market for derivatives. So there are a couple of primary rules that have come out. I think anybody that's been tracking the rules will recognize that they're not substantial departures from the early proposals that the CFTC had issued. But a couple of the obvious things that, you know, participants, active participants in the market have been worrying about, you know, can be captured in the following list. First of all, there's been a determination made about the number of counterparties that must be involved in an order for a derivative transaction to be compliant. And that was originally 5-to-1, and it's now been reduced to 2-to-1. It's been adjusted, obviously, taking into consideration the overall market landscape and assessing both the needs and requests of the traditional liquidity providers or the sell-side dealers, as well as meeting the CFTC's requirements to drive and force competition and spread the accessibility to other non-standard liquidity providers. So the compromise is 2-to-1 for the first year, which then increases to 3-to-1. Additionally, the CFTC has come out with block rules, and those block rules, again, are being assessed on day one of the effective date at a level that represents the 50% average size of the transactions that are available initially, and then that will increase to a 67% level after the first year. Again, something that people are very concerned about because it gives them some flexibility in how they execute derivatives transactions. There are some interesting points that came out of the CFTC reflecting, you know, some of their opinions and how executions should happen. And there's a fair amount of wording about the interaction of request for quote alongside central limit order book or exchange style trading. I think this presents an interesting wrinkle because certain marketplaces that perhaps historically have only been a request for a quote-driven platform may face some requirement to actually incorporate a central limit order book. And, you know, whether or not potential SEF candidates or swap execution facility candidates are prepared to do that is a big question. So it'll be a point of due diligence for participants when they look to adopt a swap execution facility. Does the SEF that I'm actually looking at meet the requirements that I'm comfortable to join that SEF? There's other parts that still aren't necessarily final, but are implicit that they need to be considered, and that details the governance provisions, governance in terms of the ownership structures, board compositions, and how committees are set up on the SEF. This is more kind of a SEF-centric question. And also, you know, most importantly, I think there is a resolution on the timeline that the CFTC presented in terms of when SEFs and when the ultimate made available for trading determinations can be made. So everything, again, and this will be kind of the point of principal interest for the marketplace, everything will trigger off of the Federal Register publication date, and the effective date will then follow 60 days after that publishing date. And that effective date will be the first window for the provisional registration of the first slate of SEFs that will seek to register with the CFTC. And then 60 days thereafter is when the compliance date hits. And then if you follow those timelines through and allow a SEF that's provisionally registered and meeting the compliance date, if they elect announce something that's made available for clearing as made available for trading, that then triggers a series of events which could make execution of certain made available for trading instruments mandated to be traded as early as kind of the December timeline. Again, everything slides based on the initial date of the Federal Register publication, but you could see some mandatory trading occurring in December. The punchline here for those listening is, even though December feels like it's a fair way off, it's precious little time for everyone to react.
On the topic of electronic trading, how do you expect electronic trading to evolve from the initial mandate to its mature end state?
That's a great question regarding the timing. We have an opinion that the SEF adoption will evolve in four phases. Essentially, the first phase will be characterized by fragmentation. Inevitably, participants in the derivative market will end up having their own opinions as to which SEF will bring them the greatest value, which SEF will give them access to the best liquidity and the best customers. So you'll have fragmentation by SEF. You'll have fragmentation by execution style. This is a request for quote market. This is a central limit order book market. This is an indication of interest market. You'll also see fragmentation by type of participant. Certain participants, investment managers versus liability-driven investors versus swaps dealers versus major swaps participants, will be seeking different types of execution styles and different liquidity pools, so that they're likely to end up in different environments. You'll also see fragmentation by instrument type, credit default swaps versus interest rate swaps versus FX derivatives versus commodities. And also, inevitably, by readiness. You'll have people, best will in the world, want to trade, but will simply be not ready to trade, and that liquidity may become not available for a period of time. So that's the initial phase. I think that will then transition into a phase where you see certain early adopters, probably characterized by traditional counterparties that are active in the markets and that have made a determination to evolve their business model in line with the regulatory pressures being brought to bear. And you'll see them start driving liquidity on SEFs or DCMs that they've actually decided that they would support. And I think you see that in the current DCM Eris exchange, where they've recently had an investor and a supporter through Morgan Stanley, who is clearly driving participation on that venue. Then you'll find the third phase, which will be an inflection point, where liquidity on the SEFs that have these anchor tenants will start to grow and multiply as more and more counterparties identify and recognize the fact that there is interesting liquidity in growth on a particular SEF, at which point you get to the fourth and most mature phase, where we believe the market will even blow through its current volume statistics and grow, albeit perhaps with smaller trade sizes, but with more volume and more trade velocity than existed before in the traditional markets. At SwapX, as a State Street offering, as a SEF, we take a look at these different fragmentation issues, and we've created a SEF that has a toolkit of different execution styles such that we can cater to the various different appetites of traders out there and hopefully better serve the market in derivatives.
Perfect. And what about voice execution? I mean, given the inclusion of voice as a means of execution, what role might voice play in the new e-trading evolution?
The voice decision was very interesting. There was a very, very strong lobby by the traditional voice brokerage community to preserve voice as an allowable method of execution based on the fact that it falls under the definition of any means of interstate commerce. And voice execution was included as a permissible mechanism for the derivatives markets. However, as a participant, when you consider the venues that you may seek to support, I think you have to take into consideration how compliant the CEF or the DCM that you're participating on, how will they meet their requirements, and will you be protected as a participant in terms of your participation on a particular CEF? And we've looked at, we being State Street, in the capacity of our own CEF, which is SwapX, taking a look at, is there a need or a role for voice? And we find that voice just alone without the combination of an electronic trading platform where matching actually can occur will struggle to stand alone as a compliant platform, because those CEFs have obligations for audit trail. They have intraday real-time compliance monitoring to look for illicit trading practices. And there are a number of what I would consider technology-heavy requirements that, in the absence of technology, digitalized technology, will put stress on voice. However, voice orders that are received and then transmitted into a CEF that's either a third party or transmitted into a CEF that is owned by the voice entity itself, I think is something that can work.
And looking at some of the practicalities, what practical challenges do participants in the swap markets over, say, the next 9 months as it relates to the adoption of CEFs?
That's a fantastic question, and I think this is a question that should raise a chill of fear up people's spines. I alluded to it in the preamble. We could have a situation where there's a made available for trading determination as early as December of this year. What that practically means is, you know, if you want to be a participant on a CEF, you will have to go through the wickets of A, making sure you are legally subscribed to that CEF. 2, making sure you are technologically connected to that CEF. 3, making sure that you are authorized to participate on that CEF, meaning you have a suitable clearing relationship with an FCM that will represent your business into the clearinghouse. So when you look at these things, there's a lot of external dependencies and a lot of internal review and preparation work that will be required for you to actually be ready and able to trade on a CEF. I just want to point out there is going to be a tremendous legal logjam and IT logjam in terms of adoption and preparation. And as SwapX, you know, having prepared our own participant agreements and our rule books, and these rule books are required by the CFTC for each CEF, the fact that these voluminous legal documents exist and, you know, largely modeled after the designated contract market or DCM requirements that have been in existence for a while, it's a non-trivial exercise. So I would encourage the listeners here to go out, get busy right now, collect the documents, understand what availability you have to connect to places, to venues, because there will be a practical logjam and a practical squeeze on time in order to enable you to get connected to CEFs.
Well, Tom, it sounds like that's quite a long to-do list for the next 6 months for people to prepare. Is it safe to say that given the practical challenges that you've really just outlined, that people have very little time to prepare for implementation for execution by SF.
Again, I can't be more vocal. I think that people that leave the preparations to, you know, the end of the summer or the fall will find themselves in a very difficult spot when it comes down to getting the internal and external resources to get things going. I know that as the proprietor for State Street's swap execution facility, SwapX, that we're working with counterparties to get them through the process, through the meat grinder, such that they can be prepared to conduct the derivatives trading that they need to be able to run their businesses. And I would just cheerlead strongly that people jump into the process sooner rather than later.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. So it seems that we now have some direction or clarity with the SEF rules that have recently been finalized, but there's much, much more hard work to come. Thank you for Tom Zekas of State Street, who has been sharing his insight with us today on SEFs. For all the listeners out there, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to get in touch with us directly at editor@derivsource.com, via Twitter or LinkedIn, or the old-fashioned way by commenting on the podcast page itself. Please also feel free to share this content and podcast with other colleagues and peers who might benefit from this information. Thank you for tuning in, and see you next time.